Thanks. So welcome home. My name is Evan Roux. I'm an independent, free, and open source software developer, mostly focused on GDAL, Map Server, Proj, LibJotif, QGIS, and a few other projects. So in this talk, I'm going to give an overview of the changes GDAL has received during the last year with 2.4 and 3.0 releases. So just to sum up GDAL in one slide. So GDAL stands for Geospatial Data Abstraction Library, and it's a piece of software you use sometimes without even realizing it. When you want to read or write a geospatial formats in most C or C++ open source or closed source GIS software. So as of today, it handles more than 240 different formats, and as a trend of recent years, it also handles more and more network protocols and services. GDAL uses a MIT X open source license, which is a permissive one, enabling you to use it in all software you want. So over the course of last year, we had two feature-oriented GDAL releases, which is quite unusual because we generally follow roughly yearly annual cycle. But as the integration of Proj 6 turned out to add some backward incompatibilities, we decided to do an unanticipated GDAL 2.4 releases with good stuff that was already ready. And so even if it was a 7 months development cycle, it was a fairly busy release with nearly 1,400 commits. So each new GDAL version comes with new drivers, and 2.4 was not an exception to this. I will not go into much details about the three items on this slide, because those are mostly side products of the Proj 6 effort and technical drivers to read datum shift grids. An interesting new item is the NGW driver. NGW stands for Next.js Web, and it's a server GIS which allows you to store and edit geodata and display maps in web browser. It's licensed under GPL2. And we have also this EEDAA, which stands for Earth Engine Data API Image Driver, and it's a way of accessing rasters which are stored on Google Earth Engine with partial download capabilities of piece of images. So the Earth Engine API itself was quite a bit experimental when the driver was released, so make sure you use the latest GDAL 2.4.2 release, which has received upgrades for the API changes. On the vector side, we have the GeoJSON sec driver, so sec is for sequence of GeoJSON features, which are separated by a new line or record separator characters. And so this is a cleaner way of having big data sets of GeoJSON instead of having a gigabytes GeoJSON feature collection, which used to blow your RAM when you tried to open it. So GeoJSON sec is an appropriate tool for such huge data sets. I mentioned NGW on the vector side, and it has its raster side counterpart. True. And the same for EEDA. It's a vector driver which enables you to query which rasters are available on Google Earth Engine and do a special or attribute queries to find the image you're interested in. Some drivers, existing drivers, have received updates. So the bag is for bathymetric attributed grid, And so now the new version of the driver can support reading variable resolution grids, because bag comes generally from a lower resolution grid and several chips of different resolution. And the driver can do an interpolation of that to present a single resolution grid, and write support was also added. Regarding the GeoTIFF driver, it received support for two new codecs. LERC stands for Limited Error Raster Compression. It's a lossy compression scheme where you can define the maximum amount of errors in terms of pixel values you want to tolerate. And the WebP codec is also useful in use cases where you would have used a JPEG before. And one of the key features of WebP is that it supports alpha channel. And so this is quite a promising codec if you want to store big GeoTIFF data in a lossy way. The PostGIS raster driver received support for hot database raster. So those are raster where the imagery is not stored in the database itself, but in a file on the file system. And the driver has been optimized so that if you run it against a local PostgreSQL instance, it can actually short circuit the database access to directly read the file from the file system. We also added two new virtual file system for the Hadoop file system. So VSI HDFS uses a lib HDFS library, which is a C library on top of a Java library. And the VSI Web HDFS uses a REST API for HDFS. So the last one is built-in for standard builds of GDAL. The GDAL control utility was mostly rewritten from scratch. It uses a Martin Square algorithm, and it's much faster than the previous one. And it also received a new mode to generate polygons, whereas previously you could only generate contour lines. And we also had a few, I would say, anti-features, the removal of the PHP and Ruby bindings, which didn't receive any maintenance, so they are gone now. So if any of you want to bring them back to life, so please join and take the stick. This item is mostly of interest for GDAL developers themselves. So GDAL has a huge regression test suite, which is made of more than 200,000 lines of Python. So by itself, it's bigger than some software project. And it was written in a kind of Hadoop test framework, so it was really unfriendly for newcomers, and even for core contributors, it was quite hard to write tests. So Craig Destichter volunteered to port the existing test suite to use a PyTest framework, and it was a huge work. He used a Bowler Python library, which enabled him to do most of the way in a semi-automatic way. And he gave a presentation about how he did that at PyCon Australia, and I've included here the link to his talk. And so this was a really massive effort, and really kudos to him and his employer for leading this effort. So let's come to GDAL 3.0. So if you followed the mailing list at the beginning, we considered calling it GDAL 2.5, but as there were some backward incompatibility and Proj 6 was actually a new requirement, we decided to call it for GDAL 3 to really indicate that there was a new step. A few new drivers have been added, so there's this TAAS drivers, which is to connect to Airbus satellite imagery. So it's quite similar in its purpose to other similar drivers like the RDA driver of a digital globe or the planet PEL scene or PEL mosaic driver or the Earth Engine data API image driver I just mentioned before. We also have a new driver for TileDB. So it requires GDAL to be built against libTileDB open source library, and TileDB is a way of managing massive dense and sparse multidimensional arrays. On the vector side, there's a new driver, which is the latest version of the libMongo CXX connector, and this enables you to connect to the latest versions of the MongoDB database. We also had a few improvements in existing driver. So the NetCDF driver was extended to be able to fetch data sets which are organized in hierarchical groups. The PDF driver on the right side was improved to be able to generate a PDF file from an XML description file where you configure your layers and which ones are exclusive of each other. And it's going to be used by QGIS 3.10, where the layout manager has been updated to use these new capabilities. And for those who are interested in planetary datasets, the last two items, the FITS and PDS4 drivers, have been also updated with new capabilities. Okay. So as GDAL gets bigger and bigger over the years, some people have requirements to make it fit in the smaller builds. So we have for Unix builds, we have a way to disable all optional drivers, and you can manually request the driver you want to build to add in the build, or you can also disable some particular drivers. There were many Docker images available in the wild for GDAL, so we have added a few official ones, if I might say. So there are five different configurations, ranging from very small builds, which fit in like 20 megabytes, to a full build based on Ubuntu. So now let's come to the main driver for the GDAL 3 version, which is the integration of Porch 6. I'll give this afternoon a dedicated talk on all the work that has happened in that area. So. I'm just going to sum it up shortly. So up to now, WKAT for CRS used to be in GDAL, and that support has been moved down to Porch 6. And in the meantime, I wrote moved, but yeah, it was essentially rewritten from scratch because we added support for WKAT to 2015 and the latest 2019 revision, and the fact that GDAL supports them now will enable the wider deployment of WKAT2, which was quite blocked by GDAL not supporting it. The CRS database, which used to be a collection of CSV files, is now SQLite3 database, which is handled in Proj. So this enables to have more query capabilities and be able to handle several CRS catalogs. We also have support from time-dependent coordinate operations. And the OGR to OGR and GDAL warp utilities have received a new switch, the CT for coordinate transformation, where you can specify a particular Proj pipeline. So this is something you will use typically with a new Proj info utility. So this is clearly for advanced users that want to precisely control the coordinate transformations they want to do on the data. And the last item is, I guess some people will say it's more a bug than a feature. But on the low-level layers of GDAL, the coordinate transformation API is now EPSG axis order compliant by default. But for the upper layers, we actually added the necessary magic to not try to break too much existing process. Another non-programming activity is an overhaul of the website and documentation. Up to now, the documentation used to be a mix of Doxygen files and static HTML pages. It has quite of non-obvious structures, and it was hard to attract contributors to it. So during the Minneapolis Code Sprint this spring, I, Howard Butler, Matthew Slaskott, Dan Beston, and a few other people decided to change this and convert the existing material to restructured text and use the Sphinx framework, which had been used for other friend projects like Proj, Poodle, Mapzero. So a large part of this could be automatically converted, but we had quite a lot of content that had to be manually migrated, so it was a pretty busy week. So here's how it looks now. So on the left side, you have a tree structure where you can navigate the documentation. And in the main page, you have direct access to the driver documentation. There's also a link to the corresponding PDF. And we were quite surprised to discover that it was more than 900 pages long, and we have omitted the API documentation from it. So there's quite a lot of documentation. And also there's this convenient edit and GitHub link you can see on the top right of each page. So if you notice some typo or, you know, easy things to fix, you can directly click on that and do the correction in a pure web workflow and issue a pull request, and yeah, you can upgrade easily the documentation. So to conclude, I give you some preview of GDAL 3.1. So in the development version, you can already find a new driver for generated cloud-optimized GeoTIFF. So it's mostly some syntactic sugar to be able to create a cog with the right set of GeoTIFF options. On the low level, we made a few changes to generate a more efficient layout of the GeoTIFF files. And we made optimization on the reading side to reduce the number of HTTP GET requests. So I think it's now close to the optimum you can get with using a compatible GeoTIFF file. Another major work is the addition of a complete new API to be able to deal with hierarchical and multidimensional arrays. GDAL has been from the beginning really a 2D raster framework, and when we want to deal with higher dimensional arrays, we had to use this subdata sets concept, which is kind of messy and not necessarily standard among drivers. So now we have a proper API to be able to deal with those multidimensional arrays. So it's implemented for NetCDF, HDF4, HDF5, GRIB. I think the TileDB driver will also be upgraded to use it. And I think we can have more drivers using this new API. And the NetCDF driver on the vector side has also been updated to be able to implement the new CF 1.8 simple geometries convention, which is a way to encode vector features in a NetCDF file. And that's it.
thank you. Thank you for all your work on this, Evan. We do have time for some questions. Evan's quite responsive on the GDAL mailing list, but now's your chance to ask him something in person.
Sorry, can you repeat the last part?
Did you do any performance measurement?
I don't think it will really have difference on the performance side. It's more on the capacities. On the coordinate conversion part, which is the main difference between GDAL 2 and GDAL 3. Setting up a new coordinate transformation can take a bit longer than before. That's actually the subject for my afternoon talk, because now we use what is called a late binding approach. So when you want to transform between a coordinate system to another one, we have to actually do lookup in the database to find the best transformation path, whereas before the transformation always went to WGS 84, so it was hard-coded and it was very fast, but of course there were a lot of cases where this didn't work. That's a question that comes over and over. There's actually a project which is called Borch, which is a CMake approach to build GDAL. It's a side project. It's not an official one. We have already two build systems, and adding a third one to the equation. You know, it's like this slide. We have 14 standards, and now we have 15 standards. So, it's an open question. Maybe at some point we'll have a CMake official build system, but adding a third one and given the size of the GDAL code base, it's quite a difficult decision to take. So your question was about how the fundraising went, that's it?
Was it harder, do you think, that the fundraising, because it's so integral, do you think that the fundraising was easier or more difficult than you had expected?
I didn't really have expectation, because it was the first time we tried this, so in the end it went pretty well. I think in 1 month, we gathered all the funds, so I think it was not that bad. Actually, I must really thank Howard Butler, because he really pushed to the funders to make them give the money.
Is there any plans to other fundraising like that to develop new features?
That's an open question. We must find first big topics like that which can attract topics where a single funder cannot generally afford funding the effort, but where you need a bunch of people gathering together.
Hi, hey. I was wondering,
Well, I'm clearly not a C-sharp developer myself. So we have Tamás Sekras, which is who is in charge of the bindings. So yeah, from time to time he updates it. But yeah, if you have particular needs, it's probably better to directly connect to him and see if he can update the binding or bring yourself your contribution to the binding, of course.